Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Thursday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Yachin Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what's going on?
We're not doing this again, are we? We did this with Luke yesterday.
Did you? What'd you do?
He was screaming at me, and I was screaming at you, and we were screaming at each other.
Oh,
we really? Yeah, we couldn't quite keep the energy up for the entire show. We fell apart. Speaking of falling apart, there's your professional segue.
What's
for
that Bananarama song? It's a cruel, cruel summer?
We're not even to the summer yet. That's the thing.
God.
It's a cruel, cruel spring. The Arizona Diamondbacks are losing seven. I liked how Sarah put it in the SportsCenter update. Well, they're not really having a good day-to-day up there in Denver, right? He was very...
Look, call like this team sucks. Call like it is. This team, I'm a fan. I bought tickets for the home opener tomorrow. I'll be there.
Yeah.
This team's terrible.
It is.
They're terrible.
It is too early in the season to already reach that level of not giving a bleep where I can just say in the update, this team sucks, but we are getting there at a record pace.
It's very early in the season to be this frustrated with your baseball team. You know, I mean, the season's not even a week old. Opening day was 7 days ago today.
We have a do-over?
We were so young.
We were 40 minutes into the season this time a week ago, and already you've just got this feeling of, ugh.
July, I said it when we did the roundtable with Bickley and Murata. The week of July 31st is the most important week for the D-back season.
Yeah,
that's a trade deadline.
They're losing 7-0 to the Colorado Rockies. They are being no hit by John Gray. This game is going in.
Well, at least this game is happening in a hitter's park.
Right. There being no hit in a hitter's park.
Yeah. I mean, last night after getting shut out in Coors Field, only the second time in D-backs franchise history they've been shut out in that building. I mean, teams just don't get shut out there. The Diamondbacks don't get shut out there.
This is bad.
It's bad. We just got a word from our program director. If for whatever reason we've got a no-hitter to give you a live look into, we'll give you a live look in. You know, hey, let's take it at Coors Field. We're 9 outs away. I have never rooted for a no hitter to end this hard in my life. Please,
I wouldn't mind seeing them get no hit.
I would mind it. Very
I mean,
much.
Because like some things have to change here. Like,
I would mind it very much. Not on my watch. Not on my watch. I don't want to. But there's a flip side to this coin. A flip side that doesn't have anything to do with Major League Baseball or the Arizona Diamondbacks. There's a flip side to what's going on in our sports world around here, and that is our top story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in.
15 left in overtime. They go to Booker. Booker just right of the lane with his back to the basket against Mitchell. Booker into the lane. Fakes, can't get the shot off. Gets it out to Chris Paul. 3 seconds. Paul for three. Shazam! Oh, brother.
Even Al McCoy with a little extra there. Shazam.
Yeah, that was fun. Enjoyable. That was fun.
So
that was
fun.
Glued to your seat and an overtime. It was playoff atmosphere. I mean, you felt it. I mean, both teams felt it.
No doubt.
So it wasn't just the fans, and it wasn't just one team thought it was a playoff atmosphere. It was a playoff atmosphere on both sides. The Jazz were trying to prove that they're the top team, and the Suns were trying to prove that they were better than them, and the game went to overtime, and the Suns prevailed. They beat a really good Jazz team. There's no injuries. They had Donovan Mitchell. They had Rudy Gobert. They had Bogdanovich. They had all their key players. So Favors played. So there was no excuses. You know,
right.
The Suns have won some games against teams that have been without key players. This was one of those games where they played a team that wanted to beat them, that were healthy and wanted to beat them as bad as they wanted to beat them.
Yeah, and that was one of the big takeaways. Just about every big opponent they've played so far this year, with the exception of Philly, and I think the first time they played Utah back on New Year's Eve, they've played them shorthanded.
Yeah.
I mean, the Bucks
Dallas
didn't have Drew Holiday.
The Bucks didn't have Holiday.
Every single one, right? Every single one except for Utah
Lakers.
The first time. And the Philadelphia 76ers came, they were weakened. They were down a guy or two or three, not last night, but beyond that, there was that reminder And I thought about this after the game. Man, I haven't been that amped up watching a basketball game since the Brooklyn Nets took on the Portland Trail Blazers to see if the Suns were going to get in the bubble. Remember how emotionally invested we were? By the way, broken hitter, no hitter just got broken up.
Oh, and they broke it up.
David Peralta with a double to a triple to left center field. He's safe.
Might be able to break up the shutout now.
Look at that.
We got a hit.
We start talking about the Suns, and good things happen to the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
There it is. That's a karma bleed through right there.
Never mind. They're still losing 7-0.
Hey, okay. Shay, shush. That's fine.
That's a touchdown.
That's fine. You're not going to no-hit my team on my watch, buddy.
Yeah.
With your goofy haircut, John Gray. What is that haircut John Gray's got going there, too?
It is a pretty bad beard as well.
It's a bad beard, and he's got some sort of like a mohawk sticking out the back. Funky.
Celebrating a base hit in the seventh inning.
Hey, you know what?
Not a run. Not a home run. Not a grand. We're celebrating a base hit.
We ain't talking about a run. We're talking about a base hit.
Mm. Yep, that's where we are.
That's where we are, ladies.
They got a run!
It's a hit parade. It's not even a shutout anymore.
Woo!
7-1.
They're only down 7-1 now.
It is 7-1.
They got two hits now.
Was that Pavin Smith?
Pavin Smith
with the RBI single
past
the diving second baseman. And okay, that's good. So the Diamondbacks are not going to get no hit today, but they're losing 7-1 in the Colorado Rockies.
Right.
Back to the Phoenix Suns. It reminded me of that Brooklyn-Portland game.
Sure. Caris LeVert came up and could have won the game and sent the Suns to the playoffs.
It took me a good half hour to come down after that game last night. Like it ended at, 9:40, I think, right? Now, you know me. Normally, that's kind of like bedtime for me.
Yes.
I wasn't going to bed at 9:40. I was up.
You were amped.
It just reminds you of that feeling of meaningful basketball games from the Phoenix Suns, of the Steve Nash era, of what it was like to play in late April, early May, late May, early June, right? And those games and how it was phenomenal. It was great. The atmosphere was tremendous. You're right. Both teams wanted it bad. Chris Paul wanted that game bad yesterday. You could tell. That's the most shots he's taken in a game in 2 years.
24 shots for Chris Paul.
You see him yelling at everybody on the floor, trying to give a high five to Donovan Mitchell after he missed a free throw.
That was so funny.
That was great. That was the best.
I didn't see that until afterwards, like when I was on Twitter. And then I saw like, hey, Chris. And Donovan was like, get out of here with that. Get out of here with that.
Here's Monty Williams after the game.
Yeah. It did. I mean, I think I saw a quote from Royce O'Neal that, you know, they were going to play it like a playoff game. And to be straight with you guys, I approach every game that way. You know, we've always said we want to approach every game the same way. That way we don't have to change when we get where we want to go. But the intensity, the physicality, the officiating certainly reminded me of a playoff game. And then for it to go into overtime felt just like that.
And what was really interesting was to hear the reaction from some of the players after the game, Chris Paul in particular, who we needed a game like that. We needed a game like that to get our guys ready for games like that.
He pushed Monty to play the starters more minutes.
Yeah.
Heavy minutes. Heavy minutes. Let's go. This is playoff basketball. Heavy minutes for the starters. You know, we're not going to rely on the bench as much. Let's go heavy. Let's see how we react. And they went out there. And listen, it was a physical basketball game.
Yep.
And I kind of related it a little bit to like a boxing match. You know, Suns came out, right? They established that jab early.
I'm shocked that you would use a boxing analogy.
Yeah, the Jazz in the third quarter came back. They got themselves, they found a way to get back in the fight. They took the lead. And then, you know, then it went to the championship. Then it went to the 15th round. Who's going to win the round? And the Suns were able to win that round. I mean, it felt like a championship fight. It felt like that you could see how physical the game was, how both teams wanted that game so badly. So there were a lot of good signs to come out of it. Look, this is, you know, we've had enough of the games against Atlanta and Detroit and Orlando. It was time to see the Suns play a team like the Jazz. It was time. We had so many games, Memphis, just so many games against these teams, Minnesota. It was time to see how they were going to play. It's been so long since they played the Jazz.
It has.
Or the Clippers.
Yeah.
And now you get it back to back.
You were gone yesterday getting your second vaccine shot. We talked about that a little bit, how this was the first like meaningful basketball, that I mean really meaningful basketball game they had played since the first time they played the Lakers about a month ago. Remember that game? LeBron played, AD didn't. That was the one Devin Booker got ejected from middle of the third quarter, right? Because of the word that he said, the magic word that you're not allowed to say. That was really the last time the Suns played a measuring stick type opponent. You could argue the Miami Heat on the road. Okay, maybe. But for the most part, it's been a month since we've had a game last night, and it was so encouraging to see them respond like that, to respond to those minutes, to respond to the failures, because not everything went well last night, right? It wasn't a problem. Mikal Bridges had five fouls most of the night.
And he was doing a good job on Donovan Mitchell.
He was
doing a good job on Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell was like 5-for-14 to start the game against Mikal. But Mikal came out, then Cam had to take him. But, you know, you lose Mikal, and it's like, okay, one of your best players is in foul trouble. And then Cam Johnson stepped up, and I thought he played good defense.
Yep, Cam Johnson stepped up. Devin Booker we'll talk about in a second. It was not a perfect game from him by any stretch of the imagination. But they found a way. They found a way to push through and survive. They did it against a top-notch opponent in a playoff-type environment, and that's good because they need games like that to get them ready for the real thing in about a month and a half.
Yeah, I thought, listen, there's a lot of different areas in a basketball game, but I thought where the Suns won that game was rebounding. They won the game because of their rebounding. The Utah Jazz do not get out-rebounded that much. Matter of fact, I went back to all the Jazz games. I started clicking and clicking each game, team stats, team stats, team stats. Last time they got out-rebounded was March 22nd against the Bulls. Okay, that's a bunch of games. And then you go through all, they just don't get out-rebounded very much. You know, they're a premier, Rudy Gobert, they're a great rebounding team. The Suns out-rebounded the Jazz by 16 last night.
Yeah.
By 16.
Yep.
So that was, to me, that was ultimately the reason they won the basketball
game. Phoenix Suns got some key performances from multiple players last night, but the play of DeAndre Ayton and some real hot and cold moments from Devin Booker stand out, and we'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Crowder, his three, no good. Long rebound, Ayton had it. Can he control it? Yes. Great hustle by D.A. Out comes to CP3. Shazam!
What a great play by D.A. Running into the rim, the ball bounces over long on him, still reaches out, grabs it, controls it, gets it to Chris Paul.
You know, Chris, we had a timeout, and I went through a play, and we went through our coverages, and he screamed at D.A., you know, that he needed every 50-50 ball, but I thought it was a team deal. Our guards swarmed in the paint tonight to go get those balls. When it was on the ground, you know, we had hands on balls and some deflections, and a lot of times we came up with it. It just shows the kind of scrap that we can play with.
Monty Williams after the game talking about Chris Paul trying to get the very best out of DeAndre Ayton, and it worked.
Listen, that's his best game, and I don't judge games by what's your most points and rebounds. Devin Booker's had 40 games better than the 70 he scored against the Celtics. He's had plenty of games that are better than that. Don't judge how great a game is by how many points you score. You judge it overall. Who's the competition? Who you playing? Suns were playing the team with the best record in the NBA. DeAndre Ayton was going up against a beast. Yeah, you sent me a note. Somebody had a tweet about how the last time he gave himself like an F when he played against Rudy Gobert.
The first time he played against Rudy Gobert, he gave himself an F.
Gave himself an F the first time. And now I give him an A+. That was a dominant performance by DeAndre Ayton. I tweeted out after the game, where are you? Where are all the DA haters? Hello, DA haters. You don't win that game without DeAndre Ayton. He was a force offensively, defensively. He was great. How many offensive rebounds did he have?
He had seven offensive
rebounds.
Seven
offensive rebounds. What was his plus minus?
His
plus 15.
I didn't have that in front
Only
of me.
Only Chris plus Paul 15. Was better. Devin Booker was a plus zero. He was a zero. Chris Paul was a plus 17. DeAndre Ayton was a plus 15. Rudy Gobert was a minus 7. Anybody watching that game last night, you know you won the game because of DeAndre Ayton. You won the game because of other reasons, too. You don't win that game. The Suns don't win that game if DeAndre Ayton doesn't play like that. He was great last night. Tip-ins, fighting for balls, offensive rebounds, defensive rebounds, little jump shots over Rudy Gobert. I mean, he was good. Not perfect. But, man, he was really good last night.
Monty, after the game on the offensive rebounding from Ayton.
I thought 16 offensive rebounds was the key for us. D.A. was a monster on the boards tonight, just being able to get those tip outs and getting offensive rebounds over Gobert was huge for us.
Eddie Johnson, this morning on the Doug and Wolf Show, something you just said a second ago. Was that Ayton's best game as a Phoenix Sun?
I think so. I agree with you there. I think it was his best game because – he played against a guy arguably is going to be considered as an MVP. And he held his own. And that's the part of DeAndre that has to get to the next level. You know, he had a good run against some teams that didn't have anybody to deal with him, and he destroyed them, and rightly he should. That's what he's supposed to do. But last night against Gobert, and Gobert wasn't chopped liver last night. I mean, he had 16 points and 18 rebounds. But Ayton, in the prime time of the game, big-time situations, outplayed Gobert.
It was great to see.
You know, people that think that it was great to see.
It was great to see.
It was just great. It was just, man, how many times, every minute he was making a play, hustle. Oh, he's too passive. He's not as aggressive. Anybody have anything to say last? He was so aggressive last night.
He was.
Now, I understand. Listen, I'm not talking about him. I'm saying last night.
Yes.
DeAndre Ayton gave every fan out there a reason to believe that he's worthy of the number one pick, that he's worthy of a big contract extension, and that he is a centerpiece going forward for the Phoenix Suns. Agree?
I totally agree.
Everything.
The context of last night, yes. I totally agree with that. Have there been moments this year where he's not shown you that, where he's given you a reason to doubt? Yes. They're both true. There have been moments this year where he's just left you longing for more. Last night was not one of those nights. And if that's the version of DeAndre Ayton that the Suns are going to get when this regular season ends here in, 22 games? If that's the version they're going to get on a semi-consistent level, this team is going to do some damage in the postseason. Some real damage in the postseason because he's that third piece that they need, right? I mean,
they can't win it all without him playing like that.
They can't,
right? I mean, we know it.
I don't even think they can get to the Western Conference Finals without him playing like that. You know, like I don't think they can get to the Final Four of the NBA without him playing like that.
He got an F the first time he played Rudy Gobert, and a couple months later, he gets an A+. We say this all the time. He's 22. Bigs take longer to develop. All these people that wanted to trade him for Karl Anthony Towns? Are you kidding me? Karl Anthony Towns. People wanted to trade him for Karl Anthony Towns. You have any idea how dumb that is? It's dumb. Dumb. Can't believe people want to do stuff like that. He's 22. He's going to be really good. It takes time. You got to develop him. He's going to be better next year than he is this year. And then he's going to be better the year after that. And in 5 years, you're going to have a monster on your hands.
Yeah. Then on the other side of the equation, here's Chris Paul on Devin Booker.
I don't know. It's just really nothing that Book can't do. You know, he can go right. He can go left. He can create for others. He defends. He's a two-way player. You know, I don't know. It's been a lot of fun. You know, I didn't know what to expect when I came, but I knew the mentality of Book, right? And so, I don't know, man. This is fun. I'm excited about, you know, the things to come.
Weird game for Devin Booker last night, because if you're just looking at a box score, if you're just watching the highlights, you would think Devin Booker had a really good night last night. And in moments, he did have a really good night.
He won
night
the
last
game
night.
In overtime.
He was 3 of 5, 7 mm-hmm. points in overtime. That layup right off of the opening tip of overtime was huge. Mm-hmm. He was big time down the stretch. In the fourth quarter, left you wanting for a little bit more, right? A lot of iso ball, a lot of one-on-one, and it's amazing. I was just talking with our boss about this a second ago. If he hits that little floater down the lane, the whole narrative about Devin Booker is very different today, because that shot would have basically iced it.
He's not making those shots this year.
But that shot was just like...
Whatever, it didn't go in.
I know,
I'm a Booker fan. I love Booker, but that shot didn't go in, and then he
but
had
it's
a
not three, his th- fault it didn't go in.
Well,
I mean,
whose fault is it?
No one, it just didn't go in. That ball was halfway down. It should have gone in.
But
there was
didn't.
No reason for it not to, but I know, but I can't hold it against him that it
didn't. But then
he got
another shot about 10 seconds later, and that didn't go in.
Well, that one I didn't like.
Okay,
you're talking about the three-pointer. I'm not going to blame him for missing that little floater from 3 feet.
He's not making shots at the end of games this year.
He did against Houston on Monday.
But he's not making them. He's not making a lot of the shots at the end of the game. So I'm a fan of his. And, you know, you can definitely make the argument, should Chris Paul be taking those shots? He was in his rhythm. Chris Paul was having one of his best games as a Phoenix Suns last night. He was great. But at the end of the game, they go to Booker. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. I mean, Booker deserves a lot of those shots. But he's not making those shots, you know. He's missing them more than he's making them by a lot at the end of games.
But the good news is twofold.
Okay.
Number one, you still won the game.
Yes.
And number two, Devin Booker still has 22 games against some pretty elite talent coming up in the next month or so to continue to work on moments like that as he gets himself ready for the playoffs, right?
Yes.
It's not like the book is closed on Book because of last night, right? Pardon the pun.
Yeah, no.
It's not like we've got, okay, that's the final verdict, that's it. We know everything there is
Everybody
to know.
Everybody knows he's taking the shot at the end of the game.
You're railing on people who are anti-DeAndre Ayton because he's 22.
Yeah.
Devin Booker's 24.
I love Book. I'm a Booker fan.
Yeah, so let's...
I argue with people all the time about that don't like Booker. I mean, I like Booker. I'm just saying at the end of the game, I'd like to see Chris Paul take some of these shots, too. That's it.
Okay.
I want Booker taking his 20 shots a game. He's a high-volume scorer.
Because I would agree with you.
I just want Paul taking some of those shots.
He goes a little too ISO for me. It's a little too, okay, yeah. Clear out. Here goes Devin Booker. Let's see what he can do.
And everybody knows what's going to happen.
Uh-huh. And sometimes I think the ball just kind of sticks with him a little bit. And I'd like to see that change a little bit. But there were moments last night where he was the guy for the Suns. You know, they just came in spurts.
And he's great. He's a great player. He's a star player in this league. But he has failed more often than not at the end of games with those shots. And I'm just saying that I think that I'd like to see Chris Paul take some of them, just some of them, not all of them, some of them.
Whether they swing for the fences or go the route of an up-and-coming assistant, there's a very good chance U of A will be making a phone call to Gonzaga when it comes to their head coaching vacancy. What are the chances the next Wildcats coach is a current resident of Spokane, Washington? That's coming up next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Yeah, yesterday was a big day around here with the news that Sean Miller was out as head coach of the University of Arizona men's basketball, and immediately people started putting together lists and names, and could it be this guy, and could it be that guy, and as we welcome you back to the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station, there were, I would say, two names that consistently got mentioned the most yesterday. One was Damon Stoudemire. Of course, the former U of A player, now the coach of Pacific, the coach of the year in that conference. And then the other, the long, long time assistant at Gonzaga, Tommy Floyd. And joining us right now, the Gonzaga beat writer. I'm sorry?
Tommy Lloyd.
Tommy Lloyd. I'm sorry. I was reading my notes and I couldn't read my own handwriting. My apologies for that. Jim Meehan joining us from the Spokesman Review up there in Spokane, Washington. He joins us here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Jim, I already botched the name, so welcome to the show. Certainly you'll make things better, I'm sure.
Good to be on with you guys.
Well, Tommy's been there for a couple of decades. Obviously, his recruiting prowess is unbelievable. Hashimura, Sabonis, Pangos, Kelly Olynyk, Rodney Torrey, so many players he was a driving force in bringing there. Give me your thoughts on to why he has not been hired as a head coach to this point.
I think mostly because he hasn't wanted to be at the jobs that were open to him. And there's been quite a few. He is a popular candidate for a lot of the jobs that have opened up for years. But he has it in his contract that he's the coach in waiting behind Mark Few. And the catch there is how long are you waiting? Because Mark Few has got the program at about the highest level you can be without having a national championship. They seem to be in the running every year. Mark is somewhere around 58 or 59, so doesn't sound like he's in any hurry to move on, and neither is Tommy in a lot of ways. I mean, Tommy is given great freedom to do his recruiting and as much coaching as you can. I think he's been in a lot of job searches kind of behind the scenes. He doesn't seek out any publicity or his name doesn't get mentioned a lot. He's probably had a lot of chances to take a job, but he's in a pretty good situation right now, and I think it'd take a great one, maybe like Arizona, to lure him away.
And that would be a great one. And, yeah, Mark Few's 58 years old. I can't see him going anywhere for the next 5 years, but look, you never know. And it's great to have that title coach in waiting, but how long do you want to wait? Two things. I mean, obviously, Arizona is one of the premier. It's a blue blood. It's one of the premier college basketball programs. It's got a rabid fan base. They send a lot of kids to the pros. They've won a national championship. That might be the type of job that would be able to lure Tommy to leave Gonzaga, a job as good as the U of A job.
Yeah, no question. I mean, when you're talking about a first job as a head coach, probably doesn't get much higher than Arizona unless you have those great connections to a program. Hubert Davis going at North Carolina, getting a job there last week. So it's no question that it's got the tradition facilities, the resources, great fan support, all those things that you look for in a job. You know, maybe there's a little bit of a hang up with what might be coming in terms of penalties from the NCAA stuff. That could be an issue. I saw one of the commitments today is kind of leaning towards getting a release as well. So it's not perfect, but as open jobs go, not many better than Arizona.
If it is going to be Tommy for U of A, and we don't know for sure that it is, obviously it's still early in the process, but if it is, who is he? Tell us about him. What is his sort of function that sort of defines what he's really good at as Mark Few's right-hand man with that program for the last two decades?
Yeah, Tommy's been 20 years plus in the program. Even before he was a full-time assistant, he was a part of the staff. And early on, Mark Few approached him and, you know, told him he might need a niche of some kind to kind of carve out, a spot and maybe, you know, elevate your own resume. And that niche turned out to be recruiting internationally. And Tommy has really worked hard at it. He played overseas for a few years after he got done playing in the States, and he's got some contacts over there. So he went, really the first major player he signed was Roni Turioff, a great player at Gonzaga and had a long career in the NBA. And then from there, it just kind of evolved. He spent a lot of time on the phones, a lot of time at the FIBA tournaments, the junior national stuff at different countries. And he started, you know, he really carved out a spot over there and started bringing high-level talent to Gonzaga when they probably couldn't get, you know, the four stars, certainly not the five stars, against head-to-head against the Pac-12 at those times. So he brought in Elias Harris from Germany, and Rui is from Japan, and just an icon in that country right now. Killian Tilly, Sabonis, he brought in. Szemek Karnowski from Poland. So he has really dialed up that part of the recruiting. They've got a couple of kids on the roster right now. Joel Ayayi from France. Pavel Zakharov. Martinez Arlauskas. So he's responsible for all those guys coming. And that helped elevate the program in the last 10 years and beyond to where they are now, to that they can get domestic kids. They're getting top-ranked kids. So he's really put an imprint that way, and then it's not really fair to him to label him just as a recruiter. Game planning, player development, he's really he's about as top-notch as you can get, and I think pretty much widely regarded as one of the top assistants in the country.
Jim Meehan from the Spokesman Review, the Gonzaga beat writer, joining us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. I only ask this because some in the fan base have asked this, and I would be curious from your perspective, is there a job out there that would tempt Mark Few himself to leave and not be the coach at Gonzaga?
And I get asked that a lot, and I just I haven't seen it, and I don't think at this point with what he's invested at Gonzaga and got the program to where it is, a couple of title games here since 2017, Elite Eights, two of them in that time frame, two Sweet 16s. The recruiting couldn't be going much better. I don't think so. I would never say never, but I mean, if you're the athletic director at North Carolina, I would think you at least place that call. So my guess is the call was placed and he's still at Gonzaga.
Yeah.
So that kind of tells you the type of jobs that he has been, people have asked about. So I don't know if there's maybe something pro-wise. That's always kind of been a thought in the back of my mind. But then again, he loves Spokane. I think it would almost have to be a Northwest situation. And even then, I don't know. I think he's so proud of what he's done at Gonzaga, and I think he wants to see it through till he's hoisting that trophy.
If Tommy did take this job, if he did get offered the job and took the job at Arizona, you think it's likely that a lot of the kids that he is actively recruiting right now are loyal to him and would go with him to the U of A? Same caliber of players, both programs.
Yeah, that part I have no idea. I mean, the way they do it at Gonzaga is maybe a little different to some degree. Tommy does handle a ton of the recruiting overseas. There's no question about that. But when they're recruiting kids in the area or across the states, there's usually two or three guys involved. It's Tommy and Roger Powell Jr. or Brian Michelson and Roger Powell or Tommy. So they don't, it's usually not just one main guy on a player. I think there's probably a couple of coaches involved. So that would get down to the relationships and cross that bridge when it comes. I have no idea how that would turn out.
Yeah. Jim, we appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on with us for a few minutes. And who knows, maybe we'll have you back on again if something happens in this area. We appreciate the time.
You bet. Thank you.
Got it. Jim Meehan, the Gonzaga beat writer for the Spokesman Review in Spokane, joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sportsline. Coulter Infinity, luxury cars, legendary service. Visit coulterinfinity.com for what it's worth. Our guy John Wilner over the San Jose Mercury News.
Eric Musselman. He's big on Eric Musselman.
Is the guy? He's like, that's the only guy.
Former NBA coach. He was here as an assistant with ASU. He's a good coach.
Yeah, John Wilner is our favorite Pac-12 insider, and he wrote a column today basically dedicated to how there should be one name on U of A's list, and that name should be Eric Musselman, the head coach of Arkansas. And it should begin and end there. Whatever he wants, give it to him and hire him. That was Wilner's suggestion.
I think Musselman would be a great choice. This Gonzaga assistant would be, a really good choice. You know, I don't know enough about Damon Stoudemire, but he's done a good job at Pacific. Some people may want to keep it close to him. Luke Walton doesn't want the job, right?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see who they get.
All right, we're a week into the season. What can and should the Diamondbacks do with their Madison Bumgarner issues? Because there are issues. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
And for that, we turn it over to Sarah Cazell as we look back on last night's Suns 4-point win in overtime against the Utah Jazz. Hi, Sarah.
Hey.
What do you have for us today?
Okay, we are, like you just said, looking back at last night's win in overtime over the Utah Jazz. Big time win, big time for sure.
Mm-hmm.
We are asking, what was your favorite performance of the following four performances? DeAndre Ayton versus Rudy Gobert. Chris Paul, all four quarters throughout the game. Devin Booker, specifically in overtime. Or Mikal Bridges off the bench.
Cam Johnson off the bench.
Oh, it says Bridges.
Does it say Mikal Bridges?
Yes. Because that's what you said to do.
No, we did not. We said Cam Johnson.
Okay, well, a lot of people write in Cam, but it says Bridges.
Okay, yeah, it was supposed to be Cam.
Cam comes off the bench. Mikal starts.
Well, I didn't get to watch last night's game, so I didn't know.
I would vote for
D.A.
Chris Paul.
Oh,
Chris Paul.
I'm going D.A.
Chris Paul just kind of said, mine, belongs to me. Most shots he's taken in the game in 2 years.
He was great.
Chris Paul was terrific.
They don't win that game without DeAndre Ayton.
They don't win that game without Chris Paul. Right? Both are true. They don't win that game without Chris Paul.
True.
Yeah,
that is why those two are the most popular responses. Mm-hmm. But
I might go with Bridges off the bench.
That's funny.
Just since he doesn't come off the bench,
literally
just see what we could get.
Said Bridges. It's okay.
Did anybody even vote for that?
1.4%. But a bunch of people responded and said Cam.
Cam, not
Cam.
Not Bridges.
Hey, yeah. You know
what? Hey, look, I call the guy Tommy Floyd. His name is Tommy Lloyd.
That's all right.
Stuff happens. Live radio.
Exactly.
That's how it works.
Amateurs
I
were
had
working
work
with
to
Jordan
do last night. Excuse?
Jordan, the amateurs we're working with.
Oh, wow. Wow,
like you can't get the guy's name right, doesn't know who's coming up the bench over here. Like,
I was writing a story for another job.
That's right,
thanks,
Jordan.
Gambo.
So give it time. I mean, I'm sure I'll make a mess up, and if we're really being honest, I'm sure it's only going to be 5 minutes or so before you have a slip.
Yeah, I was going to say.
They're young. They're developing. Uh-huh. Over time, they'll both be okay.
Okay.
Okay. Going to remember this the next time you screw something up, because I guarantee you will. But go ahead.
Give me about 30 seconds.
You won't have to wait that long. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep. All right.
I'm going to not screw up anything all day today, just for you guys, because you're going to be bracing for it.
Okay. I'm really struggling with words more now. So I'm just criticizing myself.
Okay. 50% of the vote.
Uh-huh.
Ayton.
Okay.
Versus Gobert.
I could see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it. 34% said Chris Paul all throughout the game. 14% said Devin Booker in OT, and then 1.4% for Bridges off the bench.
Mikhail's probably like, you guys know something that I don't?
Yeah.
I'm coming off the bench now?
I wanted to vote for Booker just because I root so hard for Devin Booker to have nice things. I mean, I really do. I root so hard for Devin Booker to have success because, man, he just really put in his time in this organization for all those lousy years. I want him to succeed every chance he gets. But Chris Paul was the man last night. He was just the man in that game. So, but DeAndre Ayton is the leading vote getter right now. You can vote on that at Burns and Gambo. One word on Twitter is where you can find it, at Burns and Gambo on social media if you want to vote on that
one. We know that he's working hard. He's got a process. He's got a plan, and he's prepared. This game can be unrewarding at times. And, I think just consistency with locating the baseball is very important for him and all of our pitchers. And I think when he fine-tunes that, you're going to see a better version than what you've seen so far this year, so far this season.
That is Troy Lovello talking about Madison Bumgarner. And by the way, Eduardo Escobar just hit a 2-run home run.
Oh, my. Welcome to the major leagues this year.
Are they going to save the ball for him? Mad Bum last night.
Ninth inning home runs when you're down by 6 runs.
Exactly. 5 innings, 8 hits, 5 runs. 9 of the balls that were hit off of him came off of the bat at 95 miles per hour or harder, so he was getting hit pretty good.
He got hit hard.
So far in 2 starts this year, he's given up 11 runs in 9 innings. He has given up a whopping 15 hits and 5 walks in 9 innings. Way too much traffic on the bases, way too many jams to get out of, and he hasn't been able to get out of them.
Yeah, I was home yesterday. I had the day off because I had the vaccine shot. No, that first inning, you get an infield single, off of him. It's like, oh, darn, infield single. Stolen base, error on the throw by the catcher. You got a runner on third. And then Owings hits an RBI triple. Chris Owings crushed him yesterday, former D-back. But that was after a misplay by Walker. There was a foul ball, and Walker didn't catch it. He kind of thought the second baseman was going to get it, and he let it drop foul. And then Owings got another at bat, and he ripped a triple. So I didn't think the first inning was too bad. But then, you get to the third, Owings doubles, and then Crone hits an RBI double, and a McMahon walks, Fuentes has an RBI. You're down 3-0. Okay, 3-0 in the third. That's not good. But then the fourth inning, single, sacrifice bunt, RBI single, 4-0, RBI double, 5. Like, okay, man, I've seen this story time and time and time again. I've seen this story. Look, he stinks, okay? He's an $85 million waste of money. And I don't think it's going to change. I mean, we gave him last year. There's your mulligan. And he comes out of the gates with the first 2 starts, and he still sucks. Like, I don't think that he's going to turn this around. I don't think he's a number one. I don't think he's a number two. He's a number four pitcher on most teams' rosters. Maybe a 5. But I'll give him last year, okay, the start up and then the start down and the start, okay, ramped up, then stopped, and then ramped. Great, okay, I'll give you a mulligan last year. Then you come out of the gates and you can't get anybody out in your first 2 games? Look, this is a disaster. It's a freaking disaster that they're stuck with Madison Bumgarner for the next 4 years.
He's 2 starts too soon to make that declaration about him?
Probably.
I'm just asking.
We had last year, too.
I know, but I want to give you an out just in case, it's just 2 starts.
He stinks.
It's 2 starts.
And he's not going to get any better. I don't think he's going to get any better.
It's 9 innings.
He'll have a couple of good starts here and there. He's not going to go 0-15.
Okay.
He's going to have but in the end, he's a waste of money.
Okay, because I think the more reasonable one of the two of us. I do think nine.
No way.
I think, yeah, that I'm more reasonable.
More reasonable than me?
Yes.
Survey says.
It's the truth.
Okay.
Survey says it's the truth. I got to give him more than 9 innings before I make that declaration about him. I understand. If you don't want to, that's fine. It's up to you. I got to give him more than 9.
He stinks. I can't believe that we're stuck with this guy. I really am. I'm telling him to his face, you're terrible. It's just terrible. I mean, 2 starts, you can't get anybody out.
Well, if you're right, if you're right, they're screwed. If you're right, there's nothing they're going to be able to do, and it's going to be four years of financial hell with that contract.
Listen, he's going to get 30 starts this year. The first two are awful. Agreed? The first two are awful.
I'm not disputing that.
I'm not saying he's not going to have some good starts. He is, but he's never going to pitch the way he did with the Giants when he was good.
Now if that's what we're having a conversation about, I don't think he's going to rediscover that glory. He can't be this bad the whole time. That he can't be this. If he's this,
he'll
bad
have some good starts
the whole time.
But he'll have more starts like this than he does good starts. What did you say the exit velocity was on the
Nine of the balls that were hit off of him came off the bat 95 miles per hour or harder.
They were crushing him.
They were lasers.
They're crushing him.
Yes, it was a laser show.
I mean,
he did not speak with reporters after the game either, which is something he kind of got into the semi-habit of, if I recall, last year as well with the struggle. So it's
What are you going to say? I suck again? I mean, seriously, what are you going to say? Hey, listen, I can't say it anywhere. I suck. Like,
yeah.
Figure it out, man. They're paying you $85 million. I mean, I would redo that in a heartbeat, man. I wouldn't pay him $40 million, $20 million. I know I'm jumping to conclusions here after two starts, but there's a lot of people that are also going to look at last year when he was terrible. Like, the last time he was good, he wasn't good the last year with his Giants. So how many years ago was Madison Bumgarner a good pitcher? Three? Four?
Yeah.
I just don't think he ever gets back to being a good pitcher again.
It was an impressive win, opening eyes around the league. What does last night's win over the Jazz mean for the Suns moving forward? We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.